Mark Jobo, Rustavelli Avenue. This is FieldPod.com coming to you from our studios high atop Prospero's Books and Cafe. Today is Thursday, the 5th of April, 2012. On this date in 1928, Georgian publicist Niko Nikoladze died. He was the founder of the city of Poti, where his statue still stands. Even though I thought Pontic Greeks and a bunch of pheasants founded Poti, but okay, I guess I was wrong. In 1951, Ethel and Julius Rosenberg were sentenced to death for spying for the Soviet Union. 20 years ago today, a lot happened. That being 1992, Alberto Fujimori staged a coup in Peru. Sam Walton, founder of Walmart, died. And there was one of the largest marches in Washington, D.C. history in favor of a woman's right to choose to have an abortion, which I participated in, by the way. In 1994, Kurt Cobain died, and in 2007, Georgia establishes a provisional administrative entity in the disputed region of South Ossetia, leading to the fairly brief ascendance of Dmitry Sanikoyev. Today, Cameron is back from Antananarivo, and we have a new person filling in for Will Dunbar, who is on extended oligarchic sabbatical. We have Mr. Matthias Uter of the Salzburg Uters, an expert in postal affairs. Everything we say has nothing to do with any of our official opinions of our sponsors and employers.
Our sponsors being none.
Yeah, right. Our sponsors being you, the people, our listeners. Okay. So, the deadline to decide whether Bidzina Ivanishvili would get Georgian citizenship was today. So, yesterday, the Civil Registry released a statement, a pithy Soviet-style, oh, there seems to be a problem with the paperwork statement, saying that since Ivanishvili already holds French citizenship, he can't get Georgian citizenship via naturalization, but may be able to apply for dual citizenship. Perhaps, although we have several months to decide whether or not that's reasonable. Later that day, Geiler released a statement saying that the government's refusal was an excuse since Ivanishvili has already applied for the French to the French embassy with a request to suspend his French citizenship, you know, immediately upon receiving Georgian citizenship, because the French are not allowed to take away somebody's citizenship, making somebody stateless. So there is no grounds for refusal. This morning, Ivanishvili held a press conference where he said that the arguments of the civil registry were so weak that anybody who had any doubts about the legality of taking away his citizenship in the first place have no doubts remaining at all. There was a big meeting with ambassadors about that and whatever else. He said the decision was based on the fear of one single person. Earlier, spokesperson Maya Panjikidze said that the authorities' illegal and politically motivated decision will not derail his opposition coalition Georgian Stream's electoral plans. Democracy and Freedom Watch has more on it. NetGazeti.ge reports that U.S. Ambassador John Bass called the Georgian government to make a decision on Ivanishvili's citizenship quickly and based on equality. It didn't help that the Bulgarian prime minister was visiting town and Misha handed him a Georgian passport like it was some kind of souvenir ashtray from Skaltubo or something. Misha met with the Secretary General of NATO in Brussels. Lots of nice words and thanks for Afghanistan. During the press conference, Misha called on the international community to send not only short-term but ultra-long-term observers to monitor the whole electoral campaign process. An umbrella group called It Affects You has welcomed Misha's statement, saying that they hope that the official invitation will be sent to international observers quickly and that international observers will get themselves organized to actually show up.
Yeah, and so he said that he would welcome if internationals come early and monitor the media environment and how the government applies the new party financing rulings, party financing regulations and all that. And I think it will be very important that the OSCE and others show up early, several months before the elections, because, as we all know, the largest part of the problems happens not on election day in Georgia, usually, but in the months before, when the government tends to misuse its control over parts of the media and parts over civil service, fires teachers for, you know, supporting the opposition and all that. So
I mean, absolutely. The best thing that could possibly happen would be for there to be several regionally based, long-term ODIHR observers. ODIHR is the, for those not in the trade, is the
Office for Democracy and Human Rights,
which is a sort of autonomous part of the OSCE that jealously guards its independence. It's not based in Vienna like the OSCE Parliamentary Assembly and Secretariat. It's based in Warsaw, and they're the election observation professionals. It adds a little rocky road when at some point around the Rose and Orange Revolutions, Russia realized that it actually had a seat on the OSCE and started mucking around with observer delegations. But anyway, they're the ones that are the most serious international observers, and they tend to only trust their own rather than anybody else or any domestic observers. And so it would just be great if they were to get here quickly. It is fantastic that Misha made this commitment.
So, because they can only come if they're officially invited by the government.
Right. And so, you know, we'll need to follow up and find out if the official invitation, like not the verbal invitation, but the piece of paper according to all diplomatic protocols, you know, actually shows up soon. But then just as importantly, does the OSCE and ODIHR actually, you know, get itself together? And do the donors show up to pay for these things? Because, the donors need to pay for these. There need to be sovereign entities like, for example, the United States of America and other big, well-heeled countries that would say, yeah, we'll pony up for that. So let's hope that that's expedited with all of the, you know, discussion about, you know, how these elections are very important. You know, let's get some people on the ground that can really say what's going on.
I have to say I'm slightly skeptical, however, about having a longer-term OSCE mission here or any other non-Georgian-speaking mission here. If you're looking at things that are happening before the election period, you're especially looking at the abuse of administrative resources. If you can imagine having people on the ground throughout the country, as well as people who are observing the media, I mean, these are all Georgian speakers, and there are organizations that are actually set up in order to do this type of monitoring. So what they need to be what needs to happen is that they need to be funded early to be doing this work.
Cameron, once again, is absolutely correct. The problem is that for whatever reason, people trust their own. And so, you know, internationally, the trust for these much better informed, domestic entities seems to be lower than it is for the much less informed, non-Georgian-speaking, late-showing-up international observers, which is terrible and a travesty, but a reality. And so what we need is both. Right now, frankly, there does not seem to be a whole lot of money for domestic efforts around. Hopefully that will change sooner rather than later. But both of them need to be there. If there can be the most substantial and well-organized domestic observation effort ever, and if they're not a bunch of foreigners floating around, frankly, no one's going to believe the information. And vice versa. If there's not, if there's a long-term international monitoring effort, they don't really release very much. They don't say very much, and they say, well, you know, wait till it's in our final report that'll come out after the election, you know, which is a little bit frustrating, whereas the domestic observers will comment all along. The Public Defender released a Human Rights Annual report. More than half the document is dedicated to the situation in the penitentiary system. Last year, 140 inmates died, a third of them from tuberculosis. The report puts nearly 7% of the death under the category of forceful death, including those caused by injuries. The report criticized excessive use of force by police during the dispersal of protests on May 26th, and also the dispersal of the hunger strike at Hero Square in Tbilisi in January 2011, as well as the police intervention during the strike of the steel plant workers in Kutaisi in September 2011.
The parliament is scheduled to officially announce that they've seen the report tomorrow.
Yeah.
And with seven people showing up.
Right. With seven people showing up and everybody, you know, throwing out their backs, reaching over to press buttons to say that they vote, that, yeah, okay, thanks for your input, Georgi. Which is too bad because the ombudsman's reports are quite good.
Quite extensive. And unfortunately this year it hasn't been translated to English yet. And I think it would be very important for international observers and journalists to be able to take a look at all this documentation because it's very extensive. The Ombudsman has fairly good people and good resources, and they try to verify a lot of the information that is out there. And so I think this is a very good document that, you know, summarizes what's going on in Georgia over the year and a lot of things that don't make the news outside Georgia.
I'm really curious, actually, about the Ombudsman's reputation at this point among the national movement. I don't know if either of you have heard about that, but of course we know that the former Ombudsman had kind of been the national movement's man, and then partway through his tenure really broke off and now is, of course, a part of the opposition.
Yes, yeah, that's true. Sosar Subadi was sort of, you know, he was kind of a young rabble-rouser journalist type. And, you know, he was quite fair, but he did become quite politicized, whereas the current ombudsman, I think, is I think he's much more professional. I mean, he's, you know, he's cautious. He says, you know, I don't know. I've got a pretty high degree of trust in him. I mean, where he came from is he was you know, somebody who was, you know, had a prominent position under Shevardnadze, sort of was part of Shvanya's team, you know, is currently in parliament, is on the health committee, is kind of the sort of parliamentary guy who knows about health. You know, he was his chief of staff. And so I think he's a... I don't know. I think the ombudsman has been playing this really quite well.
Well, I think, I mean, the former ombudsman, Subadi, I think, turned into the person that he became because he was so frustrated by the government's lack of response and complete dismissal of the reporting and the information that was coming out of the ombudsman's office.
Which has got to be very frustrating because certainly it was ignored. I mean, it had no influence whatsoever, as we can see by the situation of the prisons right now. I mean, I think, you know, if I could point to one of the most important flaws of international analysis of what's going on in Georgia, it's the importance that the prison system plays in how things work here.
Yeah, we have the fourth highest prison population in the world, I think.
Per capita, yeah. Yeah, and so it's really an important, you know, it's an important method of social control that people get thrown in prison. There is the impression, it's my impression that, you know, you can get thrown in jail and you're not going to get much out of due process. How often that's used is up for debate, but certainly it is the perception of the population that as an individual you have no real rights when confronting the possibility of going to jail. And you know, the government can say that, you know, well, that's wrong all at once, but that's what everybody believes, that I know, including me. And so, you know, there's a perception problem there that the government doesn't seem to be too worried about, and in some ways I think finds convenient. And so, you know, with all the discussion of how, well, we, you know, did a great job with the police and blah, 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 yes, but, I mean, I think the prisons are really a very, very important part of how Georgia now works.
And the whole plea bargaining system where you basically... you can buy your way often out of prison, get a out of prison card if you settle with the prosecutor before.
But that's like portraying it in a positive way. It's not so much that, it's that you have to go through that system.
Right.
Sort of like, you know, you get picked up for who knows what, and then, you know, the deal is because you were picked up, that means you were guilty. So there's a plea bargain, serve a year, pay $5,000, and, you know, and that's that.
We'll have to do a follow up actually, the jury trial system, because I haven't been following that since
There's only been one, right?
So okay, I guess I don't know the rollout at this point.
I don't know. Well, it's only for something like, I think, you know, some kind of aggravated capital murder in Tbilisi,
yeah,
or something like that.
Okay.
And so it's, you know, it's, there are not too many of them. So, you know, we'll see when the next, I mean, I hope there's not another case soon, you know.
You mentioned tuberculosis, which we've mentioned before as being a big problem within the penitentiary system. There's actually just yesterday, I think, a new project was opened, $4.4 million, I think, is from USAID.
Yeah.
Being contributed to that. There was, as far as I could tell, though, they gave some statistics about the new cases and everything, but there was no mention of the penitentiary system. Because I know before we talked about how I think, you know, people are acquiring TB within the penitentiary system.
And then taking it out. Yeah, well, one of the reasons that Georgia ended up with such, you know, serious tuberculosis problem, and, you know, listen, not to scare anybody who doesn't live here. I mean, I don't know anybody personally, you know, it's not like it's sort of, you know, you get it from being caught on the street very much, but, you know, if you're in and out of prison in Georgia, it's certainly a serious issue. Only a tiny portion of it is the really dangerous drug resistant kind. But one of the ways that it showed up and got serious here was that they had these drugs in prison, and they would take them till they ran out of the drug. The strain would become more drug resistant, and then, you know, it wouldn't go away. They wouldn't take the whole course. It's great that USAID is doing something. Let's see. It'd be interesting for someone to do always difficult freedom of information request to USAID and find out what that money actually did and how much of it came to Georgia and, you know, where, you know, what it does. Bidzina Ivanishvili's political coalition calls on NDI and IRI to suspend social and political surveys until parliamentary elections. Their statement reads, quote, "The opposition parties and leaders 4 times a year are victims of massive propagandistic attacks of the government, which, with or without purpose, are supported by brands like NDI and IRI." I like that brand
thing. I take
thing.
Exception to this.
It was a social survey. The government leaked the number that they needed in order to run cross tabs. They needed to, you know, find out the support of people. The government then leaked the number that they only had 10%. I think this shows spectacular stupidity of Ivanishvili and his team of turning into this, you know, this witch hunt. I mean, first of all, I think it's probably true. And I think they could have handled it much better saying, you know, well, we had this support and there was this many who refused to answer and that shows fear. And actually, if you add those up, it's this and, you know, and we're doing pretty well considering we, you know, don't have any media and all of that sort of thing, rather than this sort of witch hunt for Navarro, which he did not believe. You know, that said, I will say that it has been a challenge for NDI to build up strong relations with the opposition, whether that comes from Washington or USAID. I'm not really sure. I know, for example, when IRI and NDI send parties on trips, they always send people from the national movement on those trips, which is just silly. You know, what's the point? You know, like, just don't send them. Let the opposition be together and, you know, maybe they can congeal and do something rather than having, you know, two national movement people in the group of, you know, 10 that are traveling somewhere. Mm. I mean, you know, we didn't back in my day, we didn't do that when we sent them on trips, and there's no reason for it. I mean, what are they proving?
My impression, though, is that nobody wants to hear bad polling numbers. I haven't heard, I frequently have heard, I'll say, when you a politician hears about a low rate and then they turn around and say that the methodology is flawed or that, you know, Cox's Research Resource Center is paid for by the U.S. government, and the U.S. government supports Saakashvili, and, you know, I mean, just kind of some bizarre conclusions.
It's not healthy at all. They set up a Facebook page saying no to NDI's Luis Navarro, which got more than 1,000 likes. Interesting to troll the likes on that page and find people like, for example, Shodana Shervadashvili, among others. You know, I mean, that's not so helpful. I mean, you know, it seems to me. I mean, especially with this, you know, like, you have this on the one hand, and then on the other, this, you know, goofy bill that was proposed by this guy from Washington about, you know, the conditionality of election stuff in the U.S. Congress, which has absolutely no chance to ever pass. Of course, it was for Georgian domestic consumption, but I don't know. Still. I mean, there is an anti-American tone that is coming to the fore, I think, among Georgian Dream that just doesn't do anybody any favors. There is another interesting Facebook page calling for the cancellation of Bidzina Ivanishvili's page called Get to Know Bidzina Ivanishvili, which shows up with anti-Bidzina propaganda.
And it's actually, I think, a violation of Google and Facebook terms of use, but nobody's really taken that to them.
Right.
Because
it's in Georgian, so, you know, like,
we don't know who pays for it,
right? Of course.
So,
wait, but is that only in Georgian? Because I keep getting advertisements.
No, it's
very amusing.
I
get advertisements on my work email account for Saakashvili and on my personal Gmail for Ivanishvili, but it's this one, and Facebook as well. And I'm constantly clicking. You know, I do not want to see this anymore. And you have to give the reason. And it's always, I always love giving the reason. I find it offensive.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't ever really notice those things, so I have no idea. But interesting. Who knows? And where all the government money comes from? But then my personal favorite of the Facebook wars is Kaha Kukava from the opposition shared a question on his Facebook asking if you'd agree to give up NATO membership in exchange for Abkhazia and South Ossetia. More than 80% liked the idea. In terms of sampling, I want to know, you know,
why would Georgia give up NATO membership?
Right. I mean, why? You know, and also, like, what does that really mean? I mean, why set up that? You know, whatever.
Wait, but do the de facto authorities know about this?
Yeah. Hey, good question. I don't know. I'm sure they're shaking in their boots. Media.ge reports that Bidzina Ivanishvili was against publishing his interview in Forbes magazine after the editor in chief. Resigned allegedly for censorship. Transparency International Georgia, the hardest working NGO in Georgia, blogged about this case and condemned censorship.
Well, it was like basically a self-censorship. Forbes Georgia is one of, I think, 20 Forbes editions around the world. There's one in Russia, and the Georgian one is actually published by two Armenian businessmen. But it seemed like they didn't want to have any troubles with the authorities here. And one of the directors is actually a good friend of the minister, the head of the Secret Service here. And they went to Harvard together. So it seems like basically the owner didn't want anything sensitive, especially an Ivanishvili interview to be published. And that was the fight between the editor and the owner. And so the editor said, not with me.
I mean, but Forbes is a magazine, you know, for rich people, about rich
with
people.
With billionaires.
Right.
On it.
You know, and so, I mean, I don't know. That seems not so. I mean, it seems pretty reasonable to put him, you know, on there.
Yeah, because it was on the U.S. cover. So it looked weird to not have him on the Georgia cover.
Interesting. He was on the U.S. cover.
I think there were, four editions. So they had four long stories about four selected billionaires, the richest guy in Asia, two other guys, and Ivanishvili.
The richest guy in Asia, the richest guy in Europe, the richest guy in America, and the richest guy in Georgia? Interesting. Okay, Mormon Dumbadze, regional representative of Georgian Dream and Ajada, made a xenophobic statement during his live interview to TV25, saying that Georgi Masalkin, who represents the Republican Party in Batumi, is, and I quote, not genetically Georgian, so he can't get what Georgia is, end quote. He is known for his frequent xenophobic and stupid statements. As Tineke Ochidashvili said, this was the reason why Dumbadze was kicked out of her party last year. Bidzina's office has not reacted yet. Yesterday, he apologized. I hope somebody finds that on YouTube. I'd love to know what that apology sounded like.
Yeah. I think it was a written statement.
Yeah, like, written statement, no doubt.
No question.
By him. Like, you know, yeah. Okay. Like, you know.
And the ombudsman also said he called on media and parties and NGOs not to kind of
rebroadcast
it and use xenophobic terms, which I think is maybe it's just my impression, but I think that that's coming up more. That seems to be the easiest way to discredit somebody is to call him an Armenian, I guess.
Well,
I mean,
Bidzina, here's some free advice for the Georgian Dream. I mean, look, all right, he is now at the center of the opposition. I mean, he's the guy, right? Anyone who's not in his coalition is like, who the heck is that, right? And so he should start kicking these people out and just saying, like, you know, we don't want any of this.
We have some standards
crap.
Here.
You know, yeah, we have some standards here, and, you know, you're out now. I mean, why not? I mean, what are they going to do? Form another party? You know? I mean, so, I don't know.
They will, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But what's different now as opposed to a year ago is nobody will care.
Right.
All right? So, before, everybody had their own party and would say whatever they wanted, and that would matter, whereas now that's not the case. So I think he's got a lot of influence here, and it would be nice. He said some good stuff about, we're all in this together, and it would be good if he would, sort of put his money where his mouth is.
I was actually thinking about these xenophobic statements, though. I wonder, because there's been a big emphasis.
Xenophobic is like, means fear of outsiders,
foreigners.
All right, Armenians are not outsiders. They've been here as long as the Georgians have. Thank you very much. And so, it's really more just stupidity and racism, And so,
but what's interesting though is that there's been a big push on this kind of civic nation building by the Saakashvili regime or administration over the last since maybe 2006 or so, and there's been a lot of improvement. And so, I wonder if you're actually just hearing more about it because it's right. less popularly tolerated at this point.
Right, but then I think there's this big issue with the mosque being built in Batumi, which I think, I don't understand why that's a big issue, but apparently for a lot of people it is a big issue. And I think I even read that Ivanishvili said that he does not approve this mosque being built.
Well, I mean, particularly compared to a large majority of the opposition. I mean, the government's credentials on this are impeccable.
Yeah.
I mean, all right, every once in a while there have been some sort of loose statements here and there. But, I mean, overwhelmingly, this government has had a very progressive attitude towards, there can be all different types of Georgians. And, I think there are a sizable, collection of educated people, especially people who've, spent time abroad and sort of understand these kinds of things that would like the opposition to sort of clarify their attitudes a little bit. And it would be nice if we could somehow sort of take this out of the election, so that those, the people who have messed up attitudes in this regard, were stuck, voting for, I don't know who, which whacked out party is not going to make it a party. I didn't want to name names, but okay. Yeah, let's, right, exactly, right? So, anyway, another brilliant blog post by TI Georgia about the new amendments in Parliament, which exempt investors from any legal responsibility for negative impact on the environment, pollution, contamination, and that sort of thing. And I quote, "With these amendments, the state gives a green light to an investor to commit any action despite its hazardous effects on the environment." I mean, this is just unbelievable.
This is even retroactively applicable. So basically, you negotiate with the government. It's like a plea bargain. You negotiate a deal up front as an investor. If you build a power plant, some factory, you come to a deal. Okay, we're going to pay you X amount, and then you give us the permit to do it, and then we can do anything that impacts the environment. And we cannot be held liable.
There are several different bad things about this law. First of all, what it could mean for the environment. Second of all, what it says about, how, I mean, supposedly what the government is telling itself is that, foreign investors want this, right? That investors want this so that they will come in and build some factory and they don't have to worry. They don't have to sweat the details. Of course, it'll be fine, we're getting, serious investors in here and stuff like that. But, they don't want to have to deal with all this environmental garbage that everybody has to deal with in communistic, socialistic Europe. All right.
Environmental preservation are basically a zero-sum game. If you want to develop, then, there's degradation of the environment and vice versa.
Well, which is not true, of course. And so, but in reality, I think that they're more interested in themselves. I mean, I think this has to do more with Georgian business interests wanting to not have to worry about this stuff. It's not so much the foreign investors, because foreign investors, and I know quite a number of them and am one myself, they don't want this. All right, they would rather have a normal regulatory regime that's more similar to any other place. Because look, realistically, if at some point there happens to be a change of regime, that law will immediately become unconstitutional, and they'll have to it's what business loves is stability, and saying that there's no such thing as environmental regulations is not sustainable. That's not going to be around forever. Which means who knows what's going to happen in the next parliament or the parliament after
that? It's very 1900s.
It's just bad. On Saturday, there was a solidarity protest in six different squares in Tbilisi where people stood for human rights, media freedom, environment, and then all met together at Gudiashvili Square afterwards to protest concerns about what the government plans to do, particularly with the square itself. According to a new legislative proposal, journalists will get a fine of 1,500 lari if a video or photo identifies someone who has been accused. Media.ge reports that the Georgian Charter of Journalistic Ethics considers the initiative as another attempt to restrict freedom of expression.
Well, actually, that's actually an opposition idea that's introduced by the Christian Democrats. And
the opposition party, the Christian Democrats.
Yes, if you want to put it that way. And I don't see it. The ruling party hasn't supported it yet, and I don't think they will.
Guy Ratti, what's his name? Ratti something or other?
Yeah.
It seems like he just sort of made this thing up. This seems like a good idea.
It is actually copy-pasted from different sources. It has, I think, three different fonts in it and a bunch of grammar mistakes. So it's really of poor quality, and it would, I think, be struck down by the Constitutional Court immediately. It would be such a huge step back in Georgia in terms of freedom of the media.
Why is it a step backwards? I mean, I frankly am driven crazy by the fact that they show victims as well as the accused. The names are broadcast. Like underage rape victims, for example, like they go to their houses.
But this law doesn't cover this.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is there's a problem in general with this.
I agree, but it is a complicated question because on the one hand, the government does this all the time, or the government controls TV stations do this. You know, on the other, I mean, this could really put a damper on citizen journalism and that sort of thing. Georgia National Communication Commission warned Global TV, a cable company, for unlawful transmission of TV channels, Discovery, Discovery Science, and Animal Planet.
And it might be worth mentioning that this company is majority owned by Ivanishvili's brother, and that Kartu Bank has kind of a clause where they need to approve any change in ownership in it. And it has some, I think, Lithuanian and an American shareholder, so it looks more like, you know, a partly foreign company. But the thing is, this is, I think, a very important company for Ivanishvili to have his ninth channel that I think is launching these days, getting out so that people can actually watch that channel. And so the GNCC came up with a really weak argument. They said, yes, Global TV has the permission to broadcast, I think, in National Geographic, but they are not allowed to show it in hotels, and they found a few hotels that showed it. But another thing about this company is a couple of days ago they gave a press conference and said that they tried to import more satellite dishes and these set-top boxes, and they were destroyed by customs. So that's the story they have told before.
Customs is destroying a lot of stuff lately.
Yes, that's allegedly.
Allegedly. We don't know, but
interesting.
And Rustavi II and Imedi withdrew their permission to this company to show them, so that's a big issue because many Georgians probably won't subscribe to it if they can't watch the big government channels.
So, seems like there goes Global TV. U.S. Ambassador John Bass was visiting Western Georgia earlier this week during the meeting with local journalists in Batumi. He said, and I quote, "I am often surprised by the lack of curiosity of Georgian journalists," end quote. Hear, hear, man. You know, I mean, that is so, so true. The number of interviews that I've done where you say, you know,
"Do you like Georgia?
What is your assessment of the situation?" Meaning, I have no idea what, like, this whole thing is about, and I need to just get you on camera saying, who cares what, since we'll mistranslate it anyway. You know, so absolutely. He said it was surprising that journalists are not skeptical of statements and do not ask additional questions. Quote, "This could be partially reflecting views of producers or editorial policy of certain media organizations." Great. So
I think he also highlighted that he, in his experience in the regions, there are some journalists that are you know, tougher and more critical than in Tbilisi.
Mm-hmm. Georgian Court of Human Rights accepted consideration of a suit of former journalists of Georgian television and radio company Imedi against the Georgian government for the crackdown on the TV station 7th of November 2007. Two Georgian women who were arrested in Malaysia several years ago for carrying drugs were sentenced to 6 and 8 years of imprisonment. They could have gotten the death penalty, so it could have been a lot worse.
No, this was commuted. They had actually received the death penalty, as far as I understand, and it was actually shortened.
Well, that's good. The parliament made amendments according to which it will be able to hold parliamentary sessions in both Kutaisi and Tbilisi starting from the 1st of May.
Just to keep people on their toes.
The great retreat. Yeah, exactly. Just in case we sort of don't get that building ready or it falls down because they're mixing the concrete so badly.
That drove by a month and it was far, far from being ready.
Yeah.
It's also interesting that there's no sign who is building it, and we haven't been able to get the contract yet who is building it. We know that it's built by Magi Style, which is the company that is owned by the head of the Georgian National Communications Commission and the part owner and director of Rustavi 2.
Somebody told us that.
No, actually, that's on their website. So, and you can see the trucks and the containers and all that, which company's building it. And so it's interesting to see that it's the parliament has ordered, you know, the head of the National Communications Commission to build their new building, while they are the only organization that could fire him for a conflict of interest. So that's kind of...
Yeah. Every day an adventure.
We also shouldn't forget who... I can't remember if I've said this already, but I think it was Saakashvili who said that the labor unions will come to Georgia after all the construction is done so that they can work 24 hours a day.
Great. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I heard from somebody in town that the building that they're building, I don't know who owns it, on Freedom Square by Europe House, that on that construction site, three guys died in separate occasions during the construction.
And that's actually an interesting thing, that in many construction sites around the country, you don't see the official signs, who is building it, the permit, you know, all that. That is required by law. But in recent times, not that many signs up.
When party financing rules are violated, the enforcement of penalties will not be delayed, even if the decision is appealed. That seems kind of harsh. Gosh, I wonder why they're doing that now. The Georgian Young Lawyers filed a lawsuit demanding scrapping the government's decision to charge phone users with 20 tetri per month for the emergency service 112. The thing is, the service doesn't yet exist, and yet the government has already collected 1.4 million lari from phone users. Georgian citizens from the age of 21 will be allowed to become members of parliament. Earlier, the threshold was 25. Last week, the parliament invited justice and interior ministers Zuradeshvili and Vanametovashvili to answer questions. They were busy and sent their deputies in instead. Which is just bad, you know. That's bad. I mean, okay. I think Adeshvili was traveling, you know, but that's not okay. Really not okay. I mean, I know Parliament is a little debilitated these days, but you know, come on. The Ajaran Parliament. I assume that means the Supreme Council is working on amendments to the Ajaran election code. They have their own one since they're an autonomous republic. This time, the election Supreme Council coincides with parliamentary elections in Georgia, so a commission will be created for the parliamentary elections, as well as any other nationwide elections will also serve for elections.
I wonder how it will be different.
It'll be interesting to see. Certainly, Ajara has a proud history of electoral... vivaciousness. Former presidential candidate Levan Gachachiladze and ex-minister Goga Khaindrava and Gia Karakashvili joined the Voters League, which was established last month. They are supposed to protect voters' rights and are going to cooperate with Georgian Dream Reports Radio Tavisuk Leva. The Voters League assures that... that according to the Georgian election code, only two representatives from each international organization can be registered to observe the whole election process in the country. This means that two observers for the whole country and not two in each district.
That's a new interpretation.
It's a new interpretation.
We
see how that will play out.
Two OSCE observers.
Yeah, that shouldn't be too expensive. You know, we don't, actually, maybe Slovenia can come up with that money. We don't have to worry about that. All right. So there's more mining drama.
Well, I think you talked about it a few weeks ago. A very interesting mining license for gold and copper and other rare earths, I think, in Bolnisi was given out. And there was only one bidder who bid and got this license for 110.5 million lari. And it was basically a Lithuanian citizen who had been the frontman for somebody else. And now, a couple of days ago, this company was sold to a Cypriot shell company for 1,000 lari, which is a surprisingly small price for a company that just won a license that is worth 110 million lari.
Yeah, that's a good deal.
And so I think that would
must have been good negotiators there, huh?
Yeah. And that, I think, would be worth looking into if there are any Georgian journalists who are... happen to be looking, because I think the mining and extractive industries in Georgia is a small sector, and I think that's great because that allows us to have a fairly
normal country.
Look at Azerbaijan.
Right.
But still, it's a significant part of Georgia's exports, and I think there's quite some potential, and it would be great if there was more transparency that people could see who runs these mines, who
Absolutely.
Is
so if anybody wants to you know, take a tip from John Bass, this would be an excellent sector to start looking around in. Parliament in Abkhazia has a new speaker, Valery Baganba. He was reelected and was served last time. Democracy and Freedom Watch says that Foreign Minister Vashadze is worried about Kavkaz 2012 exercises that will include South Ossetia, Abkhazia, and Armenia as well. Giga Bokeria said on Echo Moskvi that he's worried about war. The Interior Minister said that there's going to be some NATO and Euro-Atlantic Partnership Council exercises, perhaps at the same time, called Georgia 2012. That's just what we need, a bunch of military exercises all happening at the same time during the summer of 2012. The Labour Party says it wants a referendum alongside the parliamentary elections to ask if people want military forces withdrawn from Afghanistan. The safety of Russian citizens visiting Georgia cannot be guaranteed. As the leadership organized repression against them, says Russian Foreign Ministry spokesman Alexander Lukashevich. According to him, Russian businessman Konstantin Rodoynov, who arrived in Georgia from Moscow on a business trip, was arrested in Tbilisi Airport on February 17th. The man's currently kept in pretrial detention and might face up to 4 years behind bars for allegedly visiting Abkhazia. Shota Kiziashvili, the head of the administration for the Interior Affairs Ministry, said that he was released just a couple of days afterwards and had to pay a fine of 2,000 lari.
Well, it's probably because he entered Georgia through Abkhazia, I bet.
Well, I don't think so.
No, but then when he exited, then they would have seen that he had no entry stamp. Because it's illegal to come into Georgia through
My impression was that he was arrested upon arrival at the airport, but I don't know. Look, I was, you know, just in Gudauri last weekend, and there are a lot of Russians. Whole lot of Russian citizens skiing and having a fine old time. More Russian, at least at the sort of Marco Polo area and on the lifts, more Russian spoken than Georgian, which is fantastic. So... I would disagree with the Kremlin there. And also they said something interesting there. They said that right now there's a lot of Georgians there that come up for the weekends, but during the week there's a lot more Russians. And these are Russians from, you know, they're Russian speakers who are not ethnic Russians. There's, you know, people from southern Russia, not just the North Caucasus, but all of southern Russia, as well as, you know, way up into, you know, sort of Moscow area and things like that. But that the later it gets in the season, the more Russians show up. Because it's cheaper and the lower lifts are closed and the snow is up higher and that sort of thing. So, Finnish Prime Minister was in town, met with Misha and Vashadze and Bidzina.
And alleged, I read that he also said he would discuss the threat that the crisis over Iran poses to the region.
Interesting.
So that was interesting to see.
Embassy of Georgia was opened in South Korea. Misha said that there will be direct flights to Seoul, which would be fantastic. Flying east from Georgia has been a traditional difficulty. Right now, you're pretty much limited in terms of direct flights to Urumqi, big hub, but not necessarily your most favorite destination in Asia.
Well, we've been, I think, reporting on the number of bilateral relationships that have been established over the last year, and they just announced this past week that they're working on establishing relationships with the rest of the UN membership. So they, apparently the Georgian government's working on 21 more bilateral relationships.
Fantastic. So we'll have direct flights to the Gilbert Islands.
South Sudan.
Absolutely. Juba, yeah. There's a lot of people here working in Juba, actually. You know, I know some Georgians and foreigners that live in Tbilisi that have been in and out of Juba. Commerçant.ge says Air Zanda will resume flying to Paris from May 15th. Direct flights to Tallinn will start probably just for 6 months or so. We'll start this Sunday. A big SEEF fund was open, which is going to be supposedly going to be $70 million, supposed is right now $40 million. That's going to be small and medium business, equity and mezzanine financing. It's IFC, EBRD, and some Black Sea entity that'll be funding business. Then IFC and World Bank evidently did a debt equity swap with Bank of Georgia, who owed them money. And
EBRD, I think.
Did I say? Yeah, EBRD and IFC.
Yeah.
Resonanci said that foreign debt of Georgia increased by 300% within the last 5 years. Is that right? That sounds a little weird.
But actually, I think they looked also at business debt and privately held debt and not only at government debt. And if you say that, it sounds like it's government only, but that's not the case, I think.
Huh. All right. There was a TS Press report about draconian contracts that that Al Dagi BCI Insurance coerced on doctors and hospital employees in Poti, which is quite quite interesting if you're interested in that sort of thing. Commerçant.ge reports that Zada, which is a clothing store, will open at the Tbilisi Mall outside of town. Which is kind of supposedly gigantic, and I have to admit, I sort of hope will be empty, and that somebody will get the mall, you know, the old mall by Freedom Square, and get that opened up again.
I think there's a Lebanese company that actually owns Zara, H&M, Starbucks. What's the other one that's like Zara? Yeah, and so that the implication was that many of those places will be in the Tbilisi Mall.
I thought the Zara was Spanish.
Yeah,
no
yeah,
way.
Spanish.
Starbucks is American. Are you kidding me? A Lebanese company?
Maybe a franchise license or something.
I'd heard that it was Arabs, but I thought they were from the Gulf. But, you know, okay. Supposedly the Smart Shop Visa, we mentioned the Smart Shop that's going to open up across the street from the glorious Tbilpod studios. Right in the old telecom buildings right next to the
Visol supermarket chain.
Right, the sort of Visol supermarket chain. And that Smart Shop will be a great thing for the middle of the city. Hope everybody's looking forward to shopping there. Anyway, word is that they are opening a Wendy's soon, like I think today or something like that, that there's going to be a Wendy's in Tbilisi and it's opening very soon. Wendy's now the second largest burger joint in the world after McDonald's, replacing Burger King.
I've never seen them anywhere in Europe.
I don't know. Well, you know, this is the 51st state here, so...
Now you can have Frosties with French fries.
Woohoo! Gyorgy Lamsadze and Tamadan Tales in Eurasianet.org writes about the discovery of the oldest honey in the history of the world in Georgia, saying that it is 5,000 years old.
And it was immediately countered, I think, by the oldest shoes ever being found in Armenia.
So that's an old story.
Okay, all right. 70% of the vineyards of Georgian ballerina Nino Ananiashvili burned down in the Kakheti region on the 28th of March, which is sad. Fire covered 40 hectares of her village near Tsinandali, according to Kakheti Information Center. The Erekle Meore Society in Georgia expressed support of the Christian Democratic Party's initiative to hold a plebiscite on the Azizi Mosque construction, which is an unfortunate effort by the, and I'm using air quotes, opposition party Christian Democrats. A health resort at Ahtala will be rebuilt, according to Kakheti Information Center. New Georgian Beer Company launched its brewery in Samagrelo, which will produce beer under the brand name Zedazeni. The retail price of the beer is expected to be 1.5 lari. Construction of the factory allegedly cost 70 million lari. Okay, a lot going on this week. So, question of last week was, who was the first king from the Arsacidiani or Arsacid dynasty? The answer is, and we had no answers, but I'll give it to you anyway, even though it was so easily Googleable and we try to avoid Googleable answers, but okay. The answer was Rev the First. That's R-E-V the First. Question this week, how much does it cost to get Georgian citizenship if you go for the rush service? How much do you have to pay for Georgian citizenship with the rush service?
You can ask your foreign friends who have just recently done it.
Right, but I bet they gave it free to the Bulgarian Prime Minister. All right, Cameron, good to have you back. Matthias, excellent to have you with us. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. Email is spielpod@gmail.com. Send us whatever you want. Love to hear from you. We had a very interesting discussion about minorities in Abkhazia on the website. We hope that people will post more stuff that we think... that they think that we're saying that is stupid or fabulous, or that we should put or include in there. Or you can send us an email if you want, or you can use a fake name, like, for example, Mevludi Khachapuridze, or whatever you want. If you have not seen the 1996 classic Big Night, go see it. Tonight, in honor of Winifred Lee Dollier, my maternal grandmother who turned 100 this past week, we will hear a song written by New Orleans' own Louis Prima in 1935. So here it is, Sing Sing. If you can stay in your seat for this one, go see a doctor. You may have grown roots.